Hello and welcome to episode 34 of Chicago Business Podcast, where we introduce leading executives in the area and learn how innovation is changing their industries. I am your host, Drew Sakula, and today we welcome Tyler Masterson, founder and CEO of TrueRoll, an innovative Chicago-based startup company focused on helping governments maintain accurate tax data. Hello, Tyler. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Drew. Great to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you on, and great to welcome you to the show.
Thank you. I'm a happy Chicago resident. You know, I've listened to your podcast the last couple ones, so it's good to be on.
Yeah, great. Great. Well, I'm glad to hear that. So, you know, normally we start with the beverage of the day. So you did make a selection, but weren't able to run out and get it, huh? So why don't you tell us what it would have been?
That's right. I'm a huge fan of boba tea, which is really good in Chicago right now when it's like 97 degrees on a daily basis. Boba tea is a milk tea with tapioca balls in it. And my particular favorite is taro root, which is a bit of a, it's a root vegetable. It's kind of like a potato, a tuber, if you will. But what's great about the taro root is the boba tea can be really sweet because it's a sweetened milk tea, but the taro root is more of like a savory flavor, so it adds like lots of creaminess. Have you ever had one of these boba teas?
You know what, I have one right here for the first time.
So what do you think?
I haven't had it. This is going to be the test. So
all right, this is great.
I was waiting. Now I have to preface it with, you know, I'm not a big milk guy, and I do like some teas, but well, I'll give it a try.
Luckily, there's no actual milk in there, or there right. can be, but there might not be.
No, that's what they told me when I was at the shop just a little bit ago. So,
and it might get stuck in that straw because those tapioca balls, they can come firing through that straw and you can choke on them.
Yeah, I got one. I got one that came through. And of course, I screwed it up when I went there. I didn't know I didn't remember that I needed to bring to grab a straw there too. So, so I'm using our home. These are big straws, these glass straws, but you know, for the tapioca balls there, it's pretty, a tough fit through there. So
you're actually lucky you have a thick straw like that. I don't know too many households that come with tapioca sized straws.
Yeah, that's true. No, these are pretty new, but they were a Christmas gift for my sister. Something to so we don't throw away our plastic straws. So
right on.
Anyway, that's pretty tasty. I must admit, you know, I'm one of those guys, I don't really like milk, but I like milkshakes, you know. So yeah,
it's really good.
It's sweet, but it's not too sweet.
Yeah, you can ask when you go there, you can ask them for like less sugar. They add the sugar like right there on the, like right as they make it. And so you can ask them for less sugar. It takes it down a notch. I usually go half sugar.
Mm, yeah.
But right after like a spicy, like spicy, you know, Asian cuisine, it really cools the palate.
Yeah. Very cool. Nice. All right. Well, with that, let's talk about TrueRoll.
All right.
Tell us a little bit about your business. What do you have going on there?
Sure. So my co-founder and I, co-founder's name is Joe Walsh. He's a PhD data scientist. And I founded the company in 2018. We had both been working in government data-oriented solutions for our entire career, both individually, him out of academia, and me more in the private sector, leading sales teams. And basically we came to the conclusion that government needs a lot of help, whilst modernizing their operations and their practices. And they need help in being able to utilize data to increase the efficiency and accuracy of those operations. So we looked at a number of challenges, a number of uses, and tried to find ones that we knew something about that we believe data would be, an applicable, like would provide an advantage. And then would create social impact. So one of the things we looked at, we're based here in Cook County, is property taxes. And property taxes are local government's biggest source of revenue, oftentimes in most of the places. And it's also one of the biggest sources of regressive taxation. Regressive taxation is when you're taxing, you know, lower income individuals at a higher relative rate than higher income or higher net worth individuals. So we figured if we could find a solution for, you know, relieving some of the regressivity from property taxes using data, we would have a socially impactful and technologically viable solution on our hands. And so we looked at a bunch of different use cases and we decided that we were going to help county appraiser and assessor offices administer their taxation, property taxation benefits program. So you live here in Cook County and you own a property, you get a homestead exemption. And a homestead exemption is the reduction of taxable value. So you have a $200,000 home and you have a homestead exemption. It's going to reduce the value of that property in the eyes of the appraiser and thus reduce your taxes by a couple hundred dollars and maybe even more, depending on if you're receiving a senior exemption. So what we do, TruRoll, is, you know, Cook County has 1.2 million properties receiving this tax benefit, which means, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars a year are given away as part of this property tax benefit, and they need an efficient way to manage, administer, and monitor that exemption to make sure it's being applied equitably. And so we do that for over 20 clients across 5 states. And, you know, we're just getting started. So that's TruRoll. We are a data science oriented solution that empowers local governments to create equitable and accurate tax rolls.
That's great. That sounds really interesting. And great that it has that additional kind of value to the community and contributing to equity as well. So do you guys, so you focus on the homestead exemptions. Do you also get involved in those senior exemptions?
We sure do.
Okay.
We sure do. So we help, you know, a senior exemption has a couple of requirements. One, you have to be alive. Two, you have to be over an age threshold. And three, you have to live in the property. And four, you can only claim it on one homestead. So we help our clients identify those and administer them. And I, one thing I didn't get to mention, Drew, is we do both identifying people who are receiving but are not qualified, and we identify the people who are not receiving an exemption but are qualified. So those people who just don't know about the exemptions, and you'd be surprised, there's quite a few of them, and they're just missing tax benefits that they weren't aware of. And so we help our clients identify both.
Yeah, you know, that happened to us when we moved into our places. That for the first couple of years, we didn't have them, and we didn't, you know, for whatever reason, it wasn't put on, and we didn't know to ask initially. And then I think it wasn't until we appealed our property taxes one time, and then it came up right away there when we had someone else looking at it. But
yeah, and hopefully you filed for a certificate of errors, which allows you to go back for up to 3 years and receive that exemption as a cash check.
Yeah, I think we did. It's been a number of years now, but I seem to recall that. So how do those appeals play into it all, if any? I mean, that's such a big business in Illinois and Cook County in terms of the appeals game. How does this interface with that?
So oftentimes people are appealing their value, which isn't, we're not focusing on values just yet directly. A value is determined by your location and how many bedrooms and bathrooms and square foot and condition. Those things determine your assessed value. And then from assessed value, you subtract your exemptions to get your taxable value. So upon appeals, people are usually appealing the assessed value that the appraiser determined. However, you get a lot of lawyers that have recognized that there's this certificate of errors process that allows you to go back for forgotten years of an exemption. And so they will mass mail the like south side of Chicago where the exemptions are the highest value, and basically tell people like, we will appeal your last 3 years of an exemption that you haven't been receiving, and we'll take a small cut. Well, all that is like it's another tax, because the property appraiser is trying to directly give this benefit to the citizens, and the lawyers are coming in and kind of grabbing a piece of it. And so if you administer your exemption rule accurately, all those people who are qualified should be on the exemption roll, and there should be no loss of revenue value to lawyers. So that's what we hope to help our clients achieve.
Right. Cause they're usually taking what, a third or.
Yeah. Something. Yeah. And it's just to file a form, you know, a form that you can file online. It's really kind of predatory.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So you guys use machine learning and automation. I was reading up. So why don't you tell me how that plays into it all?
Sure. I'll give you an example. So some of the qualifications for an exemption are you have to live in your property, you have to be alive, and you have to not claim multiple homesteads elsewhere. And so we have a list of, you know, about 1,000 different data sources and hundreds of eligibility, what we call qualification rules. And we'll run every single parcel in a jurisdiction through these rules, and we'll basically score them. And the score is a confidence rating based on the historical performance of each of those flags for all of our different clients. So what that means is, you know, if a property pops up as, you know, vacant 1 or 2 months over the course of the year, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're unqualified to receive their exemption. But if it's been vacant for 12 months and we identified a potential deceased owner at the property and they filed for a change of address with the post office, the machine learning algorithm understands historically that when it sees those three flags together, it's a very high level of confidence that that exemption is not qualified. And then we will flag that to our clients for removal or further investigation. So that machine learning algorithm tunes the confidence level based on historical performance of those flags. And it just keeps learning as our clients keep using the system, which is the beauty of it. So everyone in the community, the Truro community, benefits from the work of everyone else.
Right. That's really fascinating. So you guys are using this with Cook County today?
Cook County is one of our clients. Yes, we have a couple clients in Illinois, including St. Clair, Illinois, Marion County, Illinois, and a couple others that are kind of in the pipeline of trialing out the software.
Nice. And then you said several outside of Illinois as well, huh?
Yeah, in Florida and Texas, the homestead exemptions are extremely valuable, and both states have zero income tax, which means people want to claim homestead in those states so they can not only get the exemption benefits, but they don't pay any income tax. And so where there's a lot of value, there's also a lot of fraud. So we work in those states to identify fraud in that regard, people that are falsely claiming homesteads in those states. So not only they pay no property taxes, less property taxes, but also no income tax.
Yeah, I know California gets quite aggressive with that. I used to live in Nevada for quite a while, and they used to, they definitely look for people that are, you know, unnecessarily or unrightly claiming those primary residents across the border.
Isn't the California state income tax like 13% or something?
Yeah, it's a sliding scale, and yeah, it gets up to that. Nevada, again, is a zero income tax state. So there's a lot of people that have made the move.
That's right.
Or split their time, you know.
That's right. Yep.
So, let's talk a little bit more about that regressivity and how that comes into play and how this is doing good for the community.
Yeah,
besides sure. Staying accurate.
Sure. The first thing, you know, first thing I like to comment is, you know, if we're adding people to the tax roll benefits programs, the exemption programs that aren't currently receiving exemptions, like we're raising the floor. We're basically helping the community benefit that comes out of a homestead exemption, meaning trying to encourage primary residents, encourage community. When we're adding low-income seniors to that exemption roll through identification and proactive communication and getting them added to the roll, like that raises the progressivity of property taxes because they pay less than, they pay less. Additionally, exemptions at its core are, depending on the state, a pretty progressive tax benefit, meaning if you are a person with $1 million property and in Florida, there's a $50,000 homestead exemption, you're only benefiting from about 5% of your property's market value. Now, if you have a $100,000 property and you get a $50,000 homestead exemption, you're getting 50% market value reduction. So exemptions is actually one of the nation's very few examples of a progressive property tax benefit structure where it's benefiting the lower income class more than the higher income class. So we believe that like making sure that's applied everywhere it should and not applied where it shouldn't be is like an equalization exercise.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And then also for people who don't qualify, you know, who are receiving the benefit and don't qualify because they have another property somewhere, then obviously, you know, that would be progressive to fix that as well.
That's right. I mean, you've got instances where people that own 10 properties and they're all sending their mail to the same location. You know, that's an easy one. And, you know, they're cheating the tax system and everyone else is picking up the crumbs, you know, picking up the bill. So removing that benefit is a net benefit to everybody, including the schools and the court systems and the police and fire departments that rely on that revenue.
There's probably quite a bit of low-hanging fruit out there.
There is. And it's because, you know, the reason why we started the company is governments don't have access to national data sets. They don't have data science teams within their offices. They're, you know, small elected appraiser offices to handle the difficult data cleansing and matching work that has to happen to figure out if somebody has multiple homesteads nationwide. You have to have data access, you have to have data skills, you have to have algorithms written. And so the low hanging fruit for us is like a very tall tree for a local, you know, a standard local government office.
So it seems like there'd be some room for you guys maybe to bill on a contingent basis and make it it was a little more palatable for the municipal governments. How do you price out your services?
Great question. You know, as a startup, you can imagine we're pretty flexible, right? Like we're in a land grab situation where we want to demonstrate to as many county governments as possible that we have a viable solution that's not going to be politically painful and have a positive ROI. So we're willing to partner with on almost any business model. And in Florida, contingency contracts are pretty palatable. Like you said, that's no risk. We're collecting a percentage fee of what we help them collect. And in other states, the tax laws are written a little bit differently, such that they cannot pay private sector vendors out of the tax coffers, like the tax revenue coffers, and such. You have to charge like an upfront payment per parcel. And, you know, to get around that, we'll just offer a money back guarantee that if we don't generate at least twice as much as we charge, we're going to remit you the difference. And so we have those guarantees in all of our contracts.
Yeah. Well, that seems like a no brainer decision for the entities, although it's government, so it's hard to get them to move, but, that seems like a good model to be working on.
Yeah, it's really low risk, and we can kind of model it to whatever's important to the politician or appointed official. So if they care more about adding people to the role that aren't on it, we can help them with that. If they care more about ridding fraud, we can help them with that. But as you said, it is government, and status quo is a very viable competitor, right? So we may have a no risk, high value, high ROI solution, but you still have to compete with doing nothing whenever you're selling to government. Cause you know, there's a lot of inertia, you got to push pretty hard to get the ball rolling.
Right. How were you able to make that happen in Cook County?
Well, so as a 15 year government sales veteran, I have quite a few previous relationships that I've worked with as a director of sales for a couple technology companies. And, you know, one of the clients that I've had for many, many years is the city of Chicago and Cook County. And so through kind of some previous connections, we were able to, you know, line up a first meeting. You know, it's all about the first meeting. So you set up the first meeting and you try and do an understanding of what their current process is, because if you don't know their current process, you can't possibly, suggest that our process is going to be magically better. So we had to do a baseline analysis of what their process was to identify and remove unqualified exemptions. And then, you know, we demonstrated what we had as a solution. And then, you know, after kind of winning the hearts and minds of, this is how every government sales process works. Cook County is nothing special, right? It's like, you have to win the hearts and minds of the decision makers and show that you're trustworthy and have a viable solution. And then you have to go through the fund procurement process. So that's doing business with government.
Yeah. Have you bootstrapping this, or do you have outside investors in the company?
Yeah. So we started in 2018 and it was Joe and I just, you know, scraping together and losing a lot of money for a couple of years. And then mid last year, we raised money through venture capital, two venture capital firms and 12 angel investors. So we are venture capital backed at this point and have built since mid last year, have built a team of 10, which includes developers, subject matter experts, trainers, computer scientists, and salespeople. So we have now a full team.
That's great. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. And we did it all during COVID too, which means I haven't even met in person a handful of the team members.
Wow. That's impressive to do that. So yeah, let's take a step back and talk about kind of your origin story and, you know, first kind of where were you born and raised?
Sure. So I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, LaGrange, Illinois, just a sleepy western suburb right along the metro line. So, you know, hopping on the train, jumping in, going to the city since I first had my first job. So it's kind of cool to be able to do business here with a full service software company serving the big city that I kind of grew up next to.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And then you went to, we share an alma mater.
Yes, sir. Yeah, went down to Springfield. Went down to Champaign. What am I talking about? It's been true. I am old, man. You start forgetting where your actual alma mater was. But yeah, down to Champaign for 4 years for engineering school. Left there, was a consultant at Deloitte for a couple of years, and then got my start into local government. So worked at a small startup. CRM, which is a case management software for government. And then I took a year off. I traveled the world for a year. So I went to Central America, South America, and Southeast Asia. I went to 23 countries in the course of a year, learned a couple languages, and then got back to work, joined another data-oriented government startup with about 12 people at the time. I think I was like the 15th employee at a company called Socrata. Worked for them for 5 years, managed their biggest book of business, everything from the Mississippi out east was part of our territory of a team that we built, and Socrata grew and got acquired by Tyler Technologies, ironically sharing a namesake of myself. Tyler Technologies is a public company, one of the biggest software providers to government in the world. They acquired Socrata, and then from then, I left Tyler Technologies and met my partner in crime, Joe Walsh. And, the rest is history. We thought about what we were going to do for about 4 months. And then we, you know, formed the business, created the paperwork off of LegalZoom and got started.
Nice. That's great. What's been the most challenging part of it all?
Oh, man. This challenge, this homestead exemption management, is a very difficult and nuanced problem for governments. You have to know the intricacies of the laws of every state that you operate in, and then you have to codify that in terms of the code, right? And so what plays in Florida is different than what plays in Texas, is different than plays in Illinois, and different than plays in Washington. And then within those states, you have different political climates. The politicians that have different, you know, acumen for data or different appetite for, you know, taxation aggression or lenience. And so all of the flexibility and configurability that you have to build into what, you know, when I first started with Joe, I thought was just going to be fairly Boolean, right? Fairly true or false on some of these. so heavily nuanced that it becomes a much trickier problem to solve than I originally anticipated.
Yeah, I can imagine that the devil's in the details, and you have, you have that low-hanging fruit, and then you have kind of the more questionable ones where there's more judgment involved in it.
Yeah, and it's people's livelihood, right? You're talking about removing a benefit of like $600 to $1,000 or maybe even more dollars per year, and that's people's livelihood, and you can't take that for granted, and every decision has to be well thought out. And you know, Cook County, for instance, 1.2 million exemptions. That's a lot of things to look through.
Right. Right. So through COVID then, so you guys obviously continue to make good progress with your business. So why don't you talk a little bit more about the impacts of COVID for you guys?
It was really interesting. You know, obviously added challenges, but also added some benefits. So I don't know if, I'm sure you've asked quite a few people about the COVID question. You know, some of the benefits of COVID for, you know, not from a health perspective, obviously it's a national tragedy and pandemic, but from like a business perspective, there were pros and cons. One of the pros, for instance, was you didn't have to get on a plane to travel anywhere to do business, because like the normalization of virtual meetings became like something people were used to doing business with, meaning I didn't fly to San Francisco a single time to raise money from venture capital. I probably would have had to go there 5 times as a, for instance, you know. We were able to build relationships with clients at virtual conferences without spending a lot of money to get on planes and hotels and taxis and per diems and those things. The cons of it obviously were we had a bunch of, you know, prospects and prospective clients and active client engagements that all got, you know, put on hold based on more important things, right? One of our clients is King County, Washington, and, you know, Seattle was more locked down than, I'm not sure if you remember like the hierarchy of who got locked down, but New York was probably number one and Seattle was pretty close up there, right? They were very locked down. So, you know, our clients in Washington, our clients in Florida, they all had competing priorities once we got our projects started or once we did initial pitches. So COVID did slow our growth in that regard. But now, you know, people are more used to operating in the environment of COVID, that like things are moving again.
Yeah, I could see how that could be a nice benefit for you guys with your sales process and what you know, in terms of getting in front of people. It's nice when you don't have to travel across the country for your hour-long meeting, right?
Yeah, you know, I started doing that again recently during like, you know, now it's ticking back up, but for a while it was kind of tapering down. I went on a couple flights and I remembered how little, you know, it's not, business travel is not glamorous. It's like, you can have a nice meal here and there and meet some new people, but the airport is not a glamorous place.
No, I've lived that life and for an extended period of time, and it can, there are some pros to it, but especially not recently, and it keeps getting worse, I think. So
yeah,
it's tough. So looking forward, what are your most critical kind of business initiatives now?
Well, you know, there's always something when you run a software company, there's always improvements, there's always bugs, there's always enhancements, there's always ways you should have done it, but now can't go back. But I think we're kind of looking towards the future, and we want to create an automated process for end-to-end exemption administration. And what I mean by that is everything from auditing historical exemptions for errors to taking new applications to proactively monitoring existing exemption applications. And so what we hope to do is create a codified set of best practices gathered from all of the customers that we've worked with, and put together kind of like the promised land of how the best way to manage the full life cycle of an exemption administration. And then we want to create a software solution that does that automatically for our clients. There is a lot of nuance in some of these decisions, but machine learning with enough data can start to figure out enough of that nuance and start to automate those things. So we don't ever think that there will be humans removed from the process, but we want to do as much of the work possible using automation. And that makes our governments more efficient, faster, more responsive, and less expensive to run.
Yeah, well, Lord knows we could use that in government. So that's great. What kind of do you find time to get involved in kind of professional organizations in the community, or know you got your hands full with running a startup that just received funding like that?
Yeah, I mean, we are pretty focused. So we're involved in the trade organizations, right? Like the IAAO, which is the International Assessor Appraiser. I'm going to get the acronym wrong, but basically it's the association for that of which all the appraisers, assessors, and auditors get together nationally and locally every year and multiple times a year. So that happens in Illinois, it happens in Florida, it happens in Texas. And so the way we contribute is we give free trainings that qualify for continued education. So we're trying to do everything we can to give free value back to the community to demonstrate that, like, we're here to stay. Government's pretty risk averse. So they look at a startup. I mean, we've been around for 3 years, but they still consider us a startup, and they kind of like, they want to gauge to make sure you're going to be around for a while. And so we try and do everything that we can to demonstrate that we have a lot of focus and dedication and contributing to those trade organizations through content and education, I think is really helpful.
Yeah. Cool.
And then we're part of just like local, you know, trying to do local stuff. So we encourage, you know, volunteering. We encourage our employees to be a part of anything that kind of is tangentially related to data or government, and participate and contribute to those code bases, open source code bases, and just contribute value to the community.
Nice. So for our audience who wants to learn more, where should they look for you?
You can find us on the web, www.trueroll.io. We've got a really cool animated 90-second explainer video, which is kind of fun. It's got some cartoons that like kind of move along to music and narration, which makes it really easy to know what we do. You can find us on LinkedIn. And, if you're a member of the trade community of appraisers or assessors, I'm sure you'll see us at the conferences. There's one coming up here in Chicago nationally. Chicago is hosting the International Assessors Organization in downtown Chicago at the end of the month. So if you want to see us in person, just come by and stop by our booth.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you for your time today. It was great having you on. And let's stay in touch.
Thanks, Drew. It was really nice to meet you. Thanks. Yep. Keep on keeping on with the podcast. It's cool to watch.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the feedback.
All right. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.